circle, like the network, will kindly pull itself together. Gary?
Present.
You were instructed last week to find out the whole truth about those bells. Have you done so?
I have.
Out with it then, Beetle.
Well, okay, Ronnie. Now look, the bell notes serve as a cue to operators all over the country to switch circuits in order that local stations can give out their call letters, you see? And that has to be done because of regulations for the public good, made and enforced by the Federal Communications Commission. I have a copy of that regulation right here, Mr. President.
Well, let's hear it, Carrie. I think we ought to get to the bottom of this thing.
Okay, Bobby. Each licensee of a broadcast station shall announce the call letters and location as frequently as practicable during hours of operation. And in any event before or after each program being broadcast. In no event shall more than 30 minutes elapse between such announcements. And insofar as practicable, these announcements shall be made on the hour and half hour. These requirements are waived when such announcements would interrupt a single consecutive speech, play, symphony concert, or operatic production of longer duration than 30 minutes. And in such cases, the announcement of the call letters and location shall be made as soon as possible.
Now I know why they ring those bells.
To our Beatles, a pat on the back. To our Mr. Fraser, oh, a golden opportunity.
More than 30 years ago, Kellogg's Corn Flakes, the original Corn Flakes, were introduced to America. Ever since that time, this famous brand, Kellogg's, have been the largest-selling ready-to-eat cereal in the world. Now, you know that this didn't happen by accident or luck. When millions of American families prefer one brand of Corn Flakes to all others over such a long period of time, there must be a good reason for it. And there is. It's the world-famous flavor of Kellogg's Corn Flakes that has made them the nation's favorite through all these years. And that flavor can be found only in genuine Kellogg's Corn Flakes. It's the result of a special secret recipe discovered by Kellogg more than 30 years ago and guarded behind locked doors ever since. No one has ever succeeded in copying it. Enjoy Kellogg's Corn Flakes just as they come from the package, crisp and golden brown. Or the new way that's making such a hit, piping hot. Either way, you'll understand why their famous flavor has made them the favorite of American families for more than a quarter of a century. Next time you buy Corn Flakes, say Kellogg's and be sure.
Oh, mothers are so superstitious. They eat at those lumpy old dishes. When Kellogg is faring, no effort preparing. A Corn Flake that's truly delicious.
The battle cry of Battle Creek. Pull up a chair, Mr. Fraser, and the foursome. Pull up five chairs.
Let's get three chairs, Mr. Fraser.
Yes, indeed. Anything we can do for you, Mr. Fraser? Anything in the way of music you'd like to hear? Just say the word.
Well, I am exceedingly fond of ghost stories, Mr. President, like the one Mr. Grant told us last week.
Well, how about it, Gary? Any more phantom bus drivers?
No, thanks. What do you want to do, type me?
Well, has anyone else met any interesting...
Hey, Ronnie, how about the strange case of the doctor and the hold-up man?
Do you think Mr. Fraser might like that?
Sure he would. I'd like to hear it again myself. Come on.
All right, but remember, Mr. Fraser, you brought it on yourself. Well, this is one of those things. It didn't happen to me. It was told to me by a friend of mine, a doctor. I'll try and give it to you in the doctor's own words, just as he tells it. Some years ago, he begins, I was driving to New York to attend a medical convention. I was on the road somewhere in Pennsylvania when this happened. It was late, just on midnight. And I was driving very slowly because of a dense fog. Suddenly, a swaying blur of light loomed up ahead. Dimly, very dimly, I was able to distinguish the figures of two men. They were walking down the road toward me, each with a rifle under his arm. One of them had a sort of canteen slung over his shoulder. The other was wearing a tattered jacket, a jacket that looked as if it had once belonged to some kind of a uniform. I gave them plenty of room on the road and was going to drive past when one of them called to me. It was a commanding voice. Hoarse. Almost hollow in the misty darkness.
Stop! In the name of mercy, stop!
You hear him, mister? Stop for yourself!
Well, what do you want?
You don't have to be afeard, mister.
We don't aim to hurt you.
What's your trade?
I'm a doctor. Why?
A doctor, eh?
You're the man we want.
He'll do proper, I'm thinking.
You better come out of that, mister.
Double time and decent-like.
Has someone been hurt?
It's for you to say if he's been nearly killed.
Will you come along, mister?
Yes, I'll come. Let me get out. Well, where is he?
Yonder, under the tree where we laid him.
Say, would you mind telling me who you are? You'll admit this is all a little unusual.
Raise your lantern, Eben.
Aye. Good Lord.
That's Eben. I'm Zeke.
But what's happened? All that blood. Has there been an accident? Those bandages, soaking wet. What happened?
Mischief has happened, stranger.
This way, mister. This way.
Keep close. Follow the lantern.
What's it all about? I don't like it.
None of us likes it. What must be must, it ain't our doing.
I may as well tell you now. If someone's been shot, I'll have to report it to the police.
Do that. Sure, you do that.
You may be sure I will.
Here we are. There's your man, mister.
You bring that light closer, will you?
Aye.
That's better. Now, let's see. Good heavens.
Well, what are you staring at?
It's bad in the chest like that, I reckon.
It's racing. How long has he been like this?
A long time, mister. Is he bad?
Hand me that bag. Quickly.
Aye.
Here. Lend a hand with these retractors. Come on, quickly, man. More retraction. That's it. Put that back a little bit more. So.
Bad, ain't he?
Bad enough. But the bullet didn't touch any lungs, as far as I can see. Well, all I can do is to plug the wound. I've never seen anything like it.
You're young, mister. Lots of things you've never seen.
That cotton, please. Thanks. Lucky for him, his lung didn't collapse. Now, help me move him.
What for?
What for? We've got to get this man to a hospital.
He won't bleed to death, will he?
No, not with that plug in there.
All right, then. We're much obliged to you.
But I tell you, that man's dangerously wounded.
He'll be all right now, thanks to you.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way about it. But I'm reporting this to the Pennsylvania State Police at the first telephone station I reach.
Maybe you won't reach no station.
Let him go, Zeke. Fog's lifting. If we killed, mister, it was none of our wishing. What's done is done.
On your way, then, stranger. We don't want any more trouble. There's been trouble and grieving enough, and we've had our share and more. We've killed and we've been hurt for it. We're not alone. You can go now.
And our thanks to you. You can go, and thanks in the name of mercy. In the name of mercy, we thank you.
Where's your telephone? I've just been held up.
Yeah?
Yes, two of them, with rifles. But they won't be hard to identify. Bearded, both of them. Faces bandaged, covered with dirt and blood. Friend of theirs with a gaping chest wound. I'm a doctor, so they forced me to attend him.
Oh, them fellas, huh?
Oh, you know them. Well, they're desperate, I tell you, and armed.
About 2 miles down the road, would you say?
Yes, just about that. Now, if you'll show me your phone and tell me the name of that town I just passed. Well, come on, what town is that back there?
That's Gettysburg, mister.
Gettysburg.
Yeah, Gettysburg. And Gettysburg Battlefield. When it's light, you can see the gravestone. Meade's men, Pickett's men, and Robert E. Lee's.
Then those men were...
Yes. You're not the first they passed in the fog, nor the last.
Get
restless dead.
Yeah, that's right. Fill her up, mister?
Yes, fill her up.
Expect every stranger I meet is going to vanish in a puff of smoke.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. Most of them don't vanish. They follow you home and sit on the foot of your bed, gibbering.
Gibber.
I remember once a ghost came up and asked for my autograph. I sent for my ghostwriter, and I was just about...
Johnny, Bonnie, they're at it again.
Well, now, of course, some of the strangers you meet are real flesh and blood strangers. Only 9 out of 10 are ghosts.
Ronnie,
Well, you can't always spot them right away. Now, take, for instance, the fellow who just came in, the one standing behind you now, Carol.
I won't look.
No, Carol, I shouldn't. At first, I thought he was just an ordinary guy, a page boy or a vice president. And then I happened to notice that he hasn't any face.
That settles it. I'm going home.
No. Let's spare the take of his nerve. There's a cure for her jitters or jibbers. How about some soft music? Have we any soft music in the stock, Mr. Dolan?
Mr. Eternity came equipped with a full set, Mr. President. Soft and loud.
For example?
For example, the finale of the Liszt Concerto in E flat.
used to say in Madrid, ole.
Ole!
Carol, did Jose's music bring back your poise?
Oh, yes, it really fixed me up.
Oh, Lombard's chipper again. And when Lombard is chipper, there's trouble ahead.
Pardon me, Carrie, but I can't agree with you. In my little experience with women...
Oh, I wouldn't be despondent, Senior. You're young yet.
I said in my little experience with women...
Oh, don't be despondent, Senior. You're young yet.
Hey, Gary, I
said
that.
In my little experience with women...
Oh, that's what you said. Yeah.
A woman in good spirit is not dangerous at all.
Uh-huh.
It is the woman in bad spirit who can be as fascinating, as dangerous as a tiger.
Maybe Carol can settle the argument. We'd like to have a feminine point of view.
No, you would you?
Why, yes, of course.
Mm-mm, I refuse to be trapped.
I'm not in a trapping mood, Carol. You can always tell when I set out to snare innocent young females because I wear a long black cloak and a tulip in my lapel.
Don't be despondent. You're young yet, Ronnie.
Very true. But right now I'm trying to do right by Arnell.
Yeah, but I know what you're after. You want me to say what I think so you and your henchmen can sit back and sneer.
50 million henchmen can't be wrong.
But why should we sneer, Carol?
Because you always do when women try to be intelligent. Because all men are women haters at heart.
Oh, I don't hate women. Of course, I don't think they'll ever replace the old-fashioned shaving mug, but that's how it goes. Different thing, you know.
You can mark my words, Cary Grant. Someday we'll have a woman president. What do you say about that?
She'll never be the father of her country.
That's nothing but a technicality. You're deliberately trying to belittle the idea and bemuddle the issue. If there's anything I hate more than a belittler, it's a bemuddler. And you're a bemuddler.
Oh, no, I didn't say a woman couldn't be president, but maybe she could.
I know how you feel about it. You're scared. A woman will only get to be president over your dead body, which might be a very good idea.
Well, now, look, Dan, I can't answer for the rest of the men, but I'd probably vote for this hypothetical woman.
Yes, come to think of it, I guess you would. You'd want her to get elected so you could take your dimples down to Washington and profile your way into the cabinet.
No. I'm just curious. I'd like to toss a woman into the White House to see what would happen.
Well, what would happen, Carol?
Well, I'll tell you what would happen. If a woman ran, women ran this world, it would be a better world, if you really want to know. It wouldn't be such a sorry mess of a world. It wouldn't be the kind of a world that bombs kids in the street and taxes their parents to pay for the bombs. Wouldn't be a world where people were starved with surplus for stuff to eat around them. It'd be a cleaner place, saner place, and a finer place. Because why? Because women are realists. They wouldn't permit war because everybody knows nobody can win a war. They wouldn't permit slums and filth and disease and poverty because those things cost everybody money. You know what causes war and poverty? All right. All right, I'll tell you. Male stupidity, male sentiment, and male greed. Well, I know women are greedy, too, but they know how to get what they want, you know. They don't let stupid, sentimental considerations get in their way. They wouldn't start a war to get a new trade or raw materials or a swell head when they know darn well they'll end up headless and bankrupt. It all comes down to this. Men are children and women are realists. Take it or leave it, gents. Take it or leave it.
Whew! My, what an orator Arnell turned out to be.
Anybody want to play a game of rummy?
You can deal me in and say if the foursome would favor us briefly.
Good night.
Well. Swelp me, Bob. Arnell has gone often enough. 7 to 9, Groucho. Which is it?
9 cards. Deuce is wild, gentlemen.
All right, I'm in.
We used to have a little girl called Nell. And everybody liked Arnell quite well. But one summer day, Nellie strayed away. Now we're wondering what became of Nell. She took her roller skates upon that day and skated to some woods not far away. In these woods, they say, we speak monsters day. Now we're wondering which one ate our nail.
Oh, maybe an operator, maybe a radiator, maybe a percolator, maybe a sweet potato, maybe an elevator, maybe a decorator.
Well, who can tell who in the family ate our nail?
Maybe an incubator, maybe an escalator, maybe an imitator, maybe a gladiator.
What could be the fate that took Carol on a chain?
Oh, our darling Nellie Gray, they have taken her away, and we'll never see our darling anymore.
Maybe a legislator, maybe an arbitrator, maybe an agitator, maybe a commentator.
If Nellie stays, then her back will pay the freight. Bring back our darling Carol.
King, Queen, Jack, and Ten of Diamonds, gents, and out. Has anybody seen Arnell?
Arnell is back, but she's still in enough.
Oh, now, there, little one. We really appreciated your speech. As a matter of fact, that's what this club needs. I've had a couple of letters about it myself. I'd like to read one of them, if the chair is willing.
All attention, Terry.
All right, well, now this fellow writes, enjoyed your stuff and nonsense last Sunday, but for my money, I'll take more stuff and less nonsense. Give us something we can get our teeth into. You can't ignore forever the storms and passions now sweeping the world. What concerns radio listeners concerns you, and you had better find that out.
He's right. The boy's right.
Yeah, I don't care, but the minute you start that, you run smack into the problem of propaganda. How are you going to get around that?
What's the matter with propaganda? Some of my best friends are propagandists, Carrie. You, for instance, you're a propagandist for cornflakes. And Gunga Din, and cornflakes.
Yeah.
And Gunga Din. Cornflakes.
Carrie, the words got too scared, that's all. Listen, you know, every man who... Yes, whoever opens his mouth is a propagandist for something, you know. Anybody with brains enough to have an opinion is a propagandist because right away he's out trying to sell it to somebody else.
It's only when propaganda is restricted and regulated that it's dangerous, when only one side of any argument can be presented.
Yeah, I know, Ronnie, but people are so gullible. People will fall for anything. If some fella comes along with something he wants to put over, all he has to do is be convincing. He doesn't have to be right. He doesn't even have to believe it himself. He just has to know the tricks and how to work it on people, isn't
well,
that
right? Well, that's true of any salesman, isn't it?
Well, Lincoln had an answer for that one. You can't fool all the people all of the time. It's been kicked around by every comedian in show business, Groucho, but it's still true.
That's right. The very foundation of a democratic government like ours is the assumption that its citizens have sense enough to know what's good for them. To distinguish right from wrong and truth from falsehood, provided they have all the facts and nothing is kept from them. Free speech is important because it's a safeguard against one-sided propaganda of any kind. And against having anything put over on us.
Well, I'm not opposing free speech, Ronnie. Don't try to hang that on me. I'm just saying that once we start that sort of discussion, we've got to go the whole way, throw it wide open. If we can't, I think it's better not to get into it, don't you?
Listen, I'm going to read you something I came across the other day.
Shoot.
Something that has a bearing on all this.
Uh-huh. No more phantoms, Ronnie.
No, this is very real, Carol. It concerns a certain teacher of philosophy abroad. Some of you are probably familiar with his work. Anyway, he was rather outspoken in his criticism of the government of his country, which shall be nameless. And he was thrown into jail on charges amounting to treason. They gave him a choice of retracting everything he had taught and conforming from then on, or death. He chose death. A reporter who was present at the trial made a transcript from memory of the man's last words to the judges who had condemned him. I'll read part of it. He said, "Not much will be gained, gentlemen, in return for the evil name which you will have earned from the detractors of this country, who will say that you murdered a wise man. So they will call me wise, whether I am or not, when they want to reproach you. No doubt you think I was convicted through failure to plead my case adroitly. I had not, however, the impudence or inclination to address you as you would have liked me to address you, weeping and wailing and lamenting, and saying and doing many things which you have been accustomed to hear from others, but which, as I say, are unworthy of me. Nor do I now repent the manner of my defense. I would rather die, having spoken in my own manner, than speak in your manner and live. There are ways of avoiding death, if a man is willing to do and say anything. The difficulty, my friend, is not in avoiding death, but in avoiding unrighteousness, for that runs faster than death. Gentlemen who have condemned me, I am going to prophesy to you, for I am about to die, and that is the hour in which men are said to be gifted with prophetic power. I prophesy to you who are my murderers that immediately after my death, punishment far heavier than you have inflicted on me will surely await you. Me you have killed because you wanted to escape public censure, but that will not be as you suppose. Far otherwise. For I predict that you will have more accusers than you have now. Accusers whom up to now I have restrained. And as they are younger, they will be more severe with you. And you will find them harder to brook. If you think that by killing men, you can suppress criticism of your actions, you are mistaken. The way to do that is not by crushing others, but by improving yourself. Bear this in mind, too, that no evil can come to a good man, either in life or after death. I see clearly that to die and be released from this world is best for me, and that is why it was ordained. For that reason also, I am not angry with my accusers or my condemners. For you have done me no real harm, although neither did you intend to do me any good. And for that, I may gently blame you. The hour of departure has arrived, and we go our way. I to die, and you to live. Which is better, God only knows. Well, the old professor went his way, but his followers, as he prophesied, still speak out against intolerance and injustice and oppression. The professor, as you have probably guessed, was Socrates, and the reporter was Plato.
Plato. Me on a bill with Plato. Popo, Chico, Groucho, and Plato. Say, we could use that guy.
Say, did you have something to say, Groucho?
Top Plato? Not me. I have a tough time topping Ravelli.
What's the moral, Ronnie?
Moral. We've a fine country here. Let's keep it that way. Let freedom ring. And, incidentally, let Mr. Fraser through, please.
Mothers are especially enthusiastic about Kellogg's new piping hot breakfast that's fast becoming America's favorite way of starting the day. For here's one good, warm, nourishing breakfast that youngsters eat without urging. It's good for them, too, and it's so easy to prepare. Just put some Kellogg's cornflakes in a pan and heat them thoroughly in the oven. Then, just before eating, pour on hot milk or cream. Mm-mm. A rich, tempting fragrance tells you, even before you taste it, that something mighty good is on the way. But what makes this new hot breakfast such a treat is the special secret flavor you find only in genuine Kellogg's cornflakes. This rich, malty goodness is the result of a secret Kellogg recipe. No one has ever succeeded in copying it. So, if you have a package of Kellogg's cornflakes in your pantry right now, try them this new way tomorrow. Otherwise, get a package from your grocer. But be sure to tell him you want genuine Kellogg's cornflakes, the largest selling ready-to-eat cereal in the world.
Before we adjourn, I have a communication here from one of the gang. It reads, congratulate club on landing in Turvey. Congratulate Turvey on crashing club. Wish you were here. Wish I were there. It's a sign, Lawrence Tibbet, Baritone on leave.
Day letter or night race?
Good old Tibbet. When will he be back? Does anybody know?
A week after next, I'm glad to say. Now, any further amounts for the good of the order?
Mr. President, I'd like to propose a friend of mine for membership.
All right, the same friend, Carrie, Noel Coward.
That's right. He's stopping off here for a few days next week on his way to Samoa.
The circle will be honored, and Noel will be astonished, I'm sure.
Isn't he the fellow who wrote women should be stuck regularly every like an hour like a gong?
That's right, he did, yes.
Well, he'll live to regret it next week.
Carol, I'll appoint you and Carrie to devise suitable torches for our guests.
Well, then I want a paddle.
Yes, we'll strike them regularly like a gong.
We'll leave the details of the execution to the chief executioner. Meanwhile, do I get a motion to adjourn?
Listen closely, Ronald. I move we adjourn.
Second the motion.
All those in favor?
Aye. The second meeting of the circle stands adjourned.
The meeting stands adjourned. The meeting stands adjourned. Rosalie's gaze is wandering. The Groucho brain is pondering.
Did you ever, ever, ever see such a pretty petty larceny? Who took that 15 bucks from me? It's gone again. I'm
for eating stands a giant. Sing how long joy is built in me that last you dwell. You've got a right to say goodnight. Sing out for
night, all.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night.
Don't miss the circle next week with Noel Coward, in addition to the Marx Brothers, Robert Emmett Dolan, the Foursome, Cary Grant, Carol Lombard, and Ronald Coleman. This is the National Broadcasting Company.